Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
In a stunning development, just as the NBA announced the starters for the All-Star game, the rug has been ripped. The game itself, canceled. The NBA All-Star game has been canceled. The entire All-Star weekend has been shut down. So if you had plans to take that in, change them, because there will not be a game. And there sure as hell will not be a weekend. At least in my mind. At least in my house. Because I'm personally canceling that game and the entire proceedings. Reason for that. The starters were announced, and Alex Caruso somehow is not one of them. Somehow, some way, James Harden and Luka Doncic were selected ahead of him. To which I say, the hell is that? Yes, I am pissed. Yes, I am confused. Yes, I am wounded. And did I say I was pissed? This is a bleeping outrage. And yes, I am thinking about spending the next 3 hours playing Alex Caruso highlights. Why? The same reason anybody does anything. Because I can. Highlights like this.
James. Got it out to Caldwell Pope. Caruso! Oh! You didn't know you had that in his bag, did you?
Alex Caruso is more athletic than you think.
More athletic than you think? More athletic than anybody. 3 hours of that or 3 hours of this.
Gets it right back with Danny Green. Behind the back to Green. On its way. Does not go down. Oh, the Caruso! The final slam!
Let me tell you something. That right there is an all-star. If he's not in the game, it's not an all-star game. Then it's just a game with a bunch of other good players not named Alex Caruso. The Bald Eagle received nearly 1.3 million fan votes. Are you going to tell me those 1.3 mil are wrong? Are you telling me they don't know talent? Are you telling me they don't know heart? They don't know excellence? They don't know skills? You best not be saying that. But by leaving him out, that's exactly what you're saying. Now, I'm not going to make this all about Alex Caruso, although I could, although I should, and I know he can still get in as a reserve. There is still time to right this wrong, but you do not disrespect the Bald Mamba by making this guy an afterthought, by giving him some leftovers. He's not a supporting actor. He's the lead actor. He's the whole show. He's the Caruso. But then again, it's not all about him. Trae Young was selected as a starter in the East, and he got really emotional about it. And then people started lashing out, saying that a guy on the worst team in the East should not be starting in an All-Star game, which to me is another terrible issue, another terrible take. First off, once the Bald Mamba was overlooked, nothing else really mattered. But secondly, Trae Young is one of the most exciting players in the league. He does some of the freakiest things on the court. He's averaging nearly 30 points and 9 assists per night. That's all-star material. There is nothing wrong with this guy being in the all-star game. There's nothing wrong with him even starting the all-star game. Like, if you want to make the argument that Ben Simmons should be starting, I'm fine with that. I'm more than fine with the players picking Kemba Walker as a starter over Kyrie Irving, who was a fan selection. Irving just has not played enough games to start. But really, the truth is, it's not that serious. Even the players do not take it seriously. In fact, to them, it's all big joke. How do I know that? Because 32% of the players who voted did not vote for Giannis. 38% of the players who voted did not vote for LeBron as a starter. So roughly a third of the NBA, the guys playing in the NBA, not the media, not the fans, the guys playing in the league didn't think that Giannis was a starter or an all-star. Nearly 40% did not think that LeBron was. So nearly 4 in 10 NBA players had their ballot and thought, you know what? Just not that impressed with what LeBron's done this year. I mean, get out of here with that. And I know the argument. Some of these guys are thinking Giannis and LeBron are going to start anyway, so they want to put their votes to good use someplace else. Maybe support a borderline guy. That's cool. That's fine. except it does not explain leaving Caruso out. It also does not explain some of these other beauties. Check this. Andre Roberson received a vote. And don't get me wrong. This guy could play some lockdown defense. And defense, believe it or not, does have a place in that game. Even an all-star game, it should be honored. But my man has not played since January 27th. And I know what you're thinking. Yo, Rome, today is January 24th. The hell are you talking about? Right. Today is January 24th, 2020. Andre has not played since January 27th, 2018. Nearly 2 years. And somehow that guy got a vote. KZ Akpala has played 3 minutes this season. He got a vote. Ed Davis is averaging over a point per game. Point per game. He got a vote. And sure, that's probably Ed Davis voting for Ed Davis. But that does not explain Zion getting two votes. Zion hadn't played a game at the time of the voting, but he's getting all-star votes. And it does not explain the fact that while Giannis didn't get a third of the votes, his brother, T-Man, got six.
Brother.
And his other brother, Kostas, got five. For the record, Kostas has not scored this season. 0 points, but five all-star votes. 5.0 votes. Look, I know some guys have contract bonuses, which are attached to the All-Star game. So for them, it is serious. But for everybody else, you shouldn't take this too seriously. You shouldn't be getting all bent and angry on Twitter because your guy was not named a starter. Unless your guy is Alex Caruso. In which case, you have my permission to burn Twitter to the ground. Then again, why am I getting so worked up? Why should I give a damn if the players themselves don't give a damn and they don't give a damn if they're voting for who they're voting for, right? If Caruso's not there, they don't give a damn and neither do I. Just don't look for me to have any takes or any reaction to this game after it's played because I'm not watching. In fact, I'm boycotting. Do not insult the bald Mamba or me by calling this an all-star game and not including Alex Caruso. Literally one of the worst things I have ever seen in sports. So you can take that all-star game and shove it where the sun don't shine. Because if Alex Caruso isn't there, it's not an all-star game. It's an atrocity. I'll be having a conversation with the wife. Yo, Jano. Good news, Jano. Looks like Valentine's weekend is wide open this year. Nothing to see on the tube. Nothing going down in Chicago. Rare weekend off. Yeah, thanks, association. Thanks for nothing. Yo, my man, stay strong, brother. You got robbed. I know it. The entire world knows it. Stay strong.
The Caruso, let's go.
He is Michael Silver. Mike, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. By the way, I'm a Gaucho dad, so that's probably even more important.
Dude, I am so proud of you for that. So how's that experience been?
Phenomenal. I mean, you know, you know. And it's, what's weird, Jim, is that it's those kids are so smart now, it's so hard to get in. Like, so my wife and I are kind of sitting there at orientation, like, how big a party school could it be? They have to work so hard, but yet they manage. It's amazing.
Mike, I was shaking my head and laughing at that because that was the first thing that went through my mind. That's the first thing that goes through all of our minds. None of us could get in now. That's why I said to you, I am so proud of you that you got a child into UC Santa Barbara. That is not easy at all.
I know. It's amazing. So, yeah, it's a beautiful place. Tough life he's living right there on DP. But he's going to bravely soldier on.
I love that. 6,500 DP?
I don't think it's 6,500, but I took him out to dinner one night and walked him back to his place, and kids were looking at me. It was like a Friday night. It was like an elephant was walking down the street. They're like, what is this old person doing here? And I was so freaked out. I put a hat on and kind of went a couple streets up and walked back to the car and stuck back. I did not belong.
These guys are like, yo, grandpa on DP, grandpa on DP, grandpa alert. All right, so let's talk about a common problem for just 1 minute. The one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and even top performers all seem to agree upon is the perfect diet simply does not exist. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can be so hard to cover all your nutritional bases through food alone. This is why there is Athletic Greens. The Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily All-in-One Health Drink has 75 proven vitamins, minerals, and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get that comprehensive nutrition without the need for a bunch of pills, powders, and complex routines. What I'm saying is, it is the most complete supplement for a better you. And it's different from anything else I've ever tried. It's different because it's delivered in powder form and it's mixed with water. Athletic Greens requires fewer capsules. It has superior absorption. It does not include any binders or fillers. One scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and tasty solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, this is the perfect product for you. Whether you're taking steps towards a healthier lifestyle or you're an athlete pushing for better performance, Athletic Greens takes the guesswork out of everyday good health. Why not try it? Jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer right now. 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome. Mike Silver joining us. I appreciate your thoughts on that. Don't act like I couldn't talk to you for an hour about that. But am I correct in thinking, Mike, did you sit down with Joe Montana this morning? And if so, how did that go?
I sat down with him yesterday, okay. And it'll be on our pregame show on Super Sunday, and it went amazingly. And you know, he obviously he has feelings for both organizations, and you would think on paper, well, you know, 49ers, San Francisco had never won a professional sports championship. He's the guy who took them to greatness. He lives in San Francisco, but it is a little complicated because he lost his job because of injury, felt betrayed at the time by the franchise, and the Chiefs really took him in at a time where, you know, he felt vulnerable, and he just had the 2 years there, but still, you know, is kind of emotionally tied to that organization too. So he claims he's just going to root for offense, and I don't think he's going to be disappointed in this one.
I look forward to that. Mike Silver joining us. Now, Mike, you covered Super Bowl 32 when the Broncos beat the Packers, and 18-year-old Kyle Shanahan made it into your piece for Sports Illustrated. How was that? How did that come to be, and what do you remember about Kyle back in the day?
Yeah, well, what's amazing is the next year in Atlanta, so that was Super Bowl 33, he made it into the piece again, and this is what I remember. Mike Shanahan knew I wanted to spend some time with him and said, hey, come to the end of our Friday practice, you can ride back in the car with me, and then we'll go up to my hotel room in Fort Lauderdale. Well, we did that, and Kyle was with us, and Mike went up and to the suite that he had and just disappeared and showered and probably was gone for nearly an hour and just left me and Kyle in the room to talk. And I remember our conversation being nothing about football. It was all like, so, dude, what's high school like? You know, how's that in Colorado? You know, and just, you know, great kid, but I probably should have been, you know, pimping him for information if I had known he was going to turn out to be one of the great offensive minds of his generation. But, yeah, no, it is amazing to me. You know, I covered, when I first got to Sports Illustrated, I had been covering the 49ers for Northern California newspapers, and I covered that first Super Bowl in Miami, Chargers, Niners. That was Super Bowl 29. And Mike Shanahan was the offensive coordinator. And before taking the Broncos job earlier that season in September, while I was still at the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, I went to Kansas City and covered one of the most surreal games I'd ever covered, which was Steve Young and the Niners, who would later rally and go on to win the Super Bowl, against Joe Montana and the Chiefs, who were coming off an AFC Championship game appearance at Arrowhead. And, yeah, I had a great talk with Joe about that yesterday. Don't know if it'll make the piece. But one of the things that stood out in that game was that Derek Thomas, the late, great Derek Thomas, and Neil Smith and friends were so charged up and just punished Steve Young in throughout that game. And Joe played great, and the Chiefs won. And I asked Joe, you know, did they verbalize to you that they were kind of being protective of you and wanted to take it out on your successor? And he said, oh, yeah. as far back as training camp, they were basically talking in very graphic terms about what they were going to do to Steve Young. So very interesting.
We're talking to Michael Silver. You know, Mike, you talk about Joe Montana. I'm going to go back down for 1 minute because you and I are kind of that generation, and we know it's impossible to go across generations and try to compare. You know, it's just everybody wants to play that game. Who's the GOAT? You know, Mike or LeBron? I guess it really depends on your point of view. But in terms of all the guys you've covered, have you ever seen anybody in that game with the sort of it, that intangible it that Joe has? Does he still have it even?
Yeah, he does. I mean, he's very low-key and understated, you know, off the field, which is part of his charm and why I love him. But full disclosure, it's hard to be objective. I grew up a 49er fan in Los Angeles in enemy territory and pretty much saw them lose to the Rams and everyone else for most of my childhood. And then when I was 16, Joe Montana, you know, became magical, and then they became the greatest team of their era. And, you know, once I covered them, that went away, but I didn't start covering them until 1989. So I had a decade of Joe Montana being the guy who had, you know, enhanced my childhood probably, you know, more than anybody. And so, you know, listen, to me, what always set him apart was the magic. So many times where he had to rally them from dire seeming circumstances down, and you can't hold this against Brady, but Brady early on had a lot of, well, it's tied, and he kind of ducked his way down and they got a field goal. Still heroic and not his fault, but Montana, it was more of these magical, you know, insane escapes. Now, when Brady overcame the 28-3, that kind of, you know, put down a chip in that department that was pretty special. So, you know, look, I'm always going to be a Montana guy. I covered him. I saw him every day. The magic to me is overwhelming. It's hard, you know, to say that Tom Brady's career and body of work is not the greatest ever put down. And I think you can make cases for guys like Peyton Manning and Elway and Johnny Unitas, who I didn't get to see, and Otto Graham and Marino. And that's what makes that's what makes it so fun.
All right, so one final thought, Mike, and you and I could talk for a long, long time about a lot of things, but as long as we're having this discussion, so you've got Joe or Brady, you've got Mike or LeBron. I'm going to hit you with one more now, off the board. The Rolling Stones or The Who?
Wow, okay, so I got to sit down with Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey earlier this year and wrote many words about it, and it aired on our network, so I'm coming off this surreal experience that was incredible. I think what's interesting is that my dad, who was in his late 70s, who, you know, taught me about rock and roll, I think we would be debating on the air right now, and I would take the Stones and he would take the Who. Huh. And it would be a great debate. But I'll also take Jordan and Joe and the Stones, and I'll live with it. You know, they're unsolvable debates, and if I could ever interview Mick and Keith, I could compare that experience with the career-capping, insane experience of spending 50 minutes with Roger and Pete.
I was going to say, Mike, really quickly, there is no right answer. There is no wrong answer. I would go with your dad on this one. I love the Stones. I mean, I love the Stones, but I like the Who just a little bit better. What was it like to sit down with those two?
Utterly surreal. Now, among other things, Pete Townsend told me to bleep off four times consecutively.
Awesome.
And the fourth time he said, no, seriously, bleep off. And, I was in my happy place as it was happening because, A, I mean, it's amazing. B, it was on camera. C, I didn't really disagree with him. Like, I kind of said some smart alecky thing that triggered him. So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't particularly invested. And D, while it was happening, the entire time Roger Daltrey was sitting next to him, was kind of making a face at me and mouthing something, and I took it to be, don't worry about that grumpy guy. He just does this sometimes. And then we were friends again pretty, you know, probably about a minute later. So it was amazing. I just thought, you know, there aren't that many football tie-ins because, you know, Roger's a soccer fan, doesn't really know anything about American football. Pete doesn't care about any of it. But, you know, beyond the, trying to tie it into what I do, just from a music perspective, they said things to me that were chilling that if I were just a music journalist and took that content, I would have been utterly blown away. So for people who care, I wrote about 6,000 words on it on NFL.com. I'm sure you can find it either in my archives or if you Google me and the Who, but it was pretty special.
It's tremendous. Go find it. He is an NFL media reporter and a columnist. He is the pride of Cal. Good friend of the program. He is Michael Silver. Mike, great to have you back. Great conversation. Appreciate it so much.
Thanks, Jim. Go Chos!
Tony Loughman will be part of NHL Network's live coverage of the All-Star Skills Competition and the All-Star Game itself today and tomorrow, beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern from St. Louis. Tony, what's up? Welcome back. How are you?
Rome, I am fantastic. Great to be with you. And I have to admit, unlike you, who looked pretty much at home in the cold temperatures,
yeah.
I do not do as well. I landed yesterday in St. Louis, and it looked like Hoth from Empire Strikes Back. All I could think was, where are the Tauntauns? That's the bad news. Good news is, for breakfast, I had Wookiee's cookies. They're chewy.
You're too much, dude. Yeah, I look great. I hound that really well. I haven't taken one step, Tony, anywhere without somebody going, yo, Rome, damn, dude, you look cold. Damn, dude, how cold were you? Really bleeping cold. That's how cold. All right, so yeah. You're in St. Louis. I can tell it's treating you pretty well. Let me jump right into this thing. There are 19 first-time All-Stars this season. 19. First of all, what does that number mean to you, and how pumped are you to see all the first-timers?
I'm so excited about it because you see on their face and you experience when you're around them just how much it means to them. It tells you just how talented our young players are. More and more, when you talk to veterans, they say, I can't believe how ready for the NHL these guys are. A prime example is Quinn Hughes, American-born kid. His brother Jack was the first draft pick last year. Quinn is as nice a human being. Forget about sports. As nice a human being as you'd ever want to meet. So unassuming, so modest, so humble. My favorite story about him, he was playing in the World Championships. His assistant coach, Dan Bylsma, is giving him pointers because that's what assistant coaches do. And each time he gives him something to do, Quinn turns around and goes, thank you, coach. Dan says, listen, we're in the middle of games. We don't have time for you to turn around and say, thanks, coach. Quinn goes, thanks, coach. He's amazing. Nice kid.
I love it. Tony Loughman joining us. And then, Tony, you've got Tampa Bay goalie Andre Vasilevsky, who's there this weekend. He has been really hot of late, winning his last 10. What do you make of how he's playing right now?
It's amazing the way that I got rope-a-doped. The whole hockey world was stunned to see that Tampa team last year win the President's Trophy. He wins the Vezina. They look like one of the greatest teams of all time. They get swept out of the first round. I sent an email to John Cooper, their coach. You and I are both big Coop fans. Smart guy, lawyer by trade, became an NHL coach, one of the elite communicators ever. So all of us were interested to see how would they do this year. They win 12 of their first 24, and I thought, lingering effects. This is not going to be UVA basketball. They're really going to struggle with putting that behind them. Then they go on a tear. Since December 1, second best points percentage in the league. And specifically, Vasilevsky, his numbers were pedestrian compared to what we've seen him do at the age of 20 in the 2015 Cup final. He played in two games. Pulse of a marathoner, ultra cool, ultra calm. He's back. I got rope-a-dope just like George Foreman did. These Bolts are back. They look every bit as good as they did last year. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with this year in the playoffs.
No, we all were. We all did. It was weird. Really a weird, weird deal. Tony Loughman joining us. Now, you're always a high-energy guy and somebody who brings a lot of enthusiasm to literally everything you do. That said, you're going to sit down with Mikey Ruzioni on Monday to interview him. Knowing the impact that team had on you personally, how are you going to be able to stay in your shoes when you sit down to talk to the captain?
Rome, I'm out of my mind. I'm bouncing off walls. This is a whole different... This is like ADD flaring up to record levels. I can't tell you how excited I am. I thank my boss for giving me the opportunity. I'm reading Ruzioni's new book. I thought I knew everything about that team and him specifically and all those players. This book, The Making of a Miracle, just blows me away. There's so many cool things in it. One of my favorite stories, it's real quick. He called his mom from the Olympic Festival in 79 where they were doing the tryouts. He said, Mom, there's 68 guys here. They can all skate really fast. I'm pretty sure I'll be home in a week. We know he didn't end up going home in a week. He scored the goal to beat the Russians, and that team went down in history. The one thing I want to do when I do interview Ruzioni is try to encapsulate for him covering hockey for as long as I have, the long-lasting impact, the legacy that that team had. It wasn't until Mike Ramsey was drafted in the first round from that team that an American went first round. Since then, eight Americans have gone first overall. That team changed the way that American hockey is viewed by the rest of the world. What a legacy.
Enjoy that. Tony Loughman joining us. All right, what about Alex Ovechkin? He's not going to be at the All-Star game this weekend, but the players are still talking about him, and in particular, the fact that he's currently sitting on 692 career goals. He's currently tied with Steve Yzerman. He's two back of Mark Messier, obviously eight away from 700. As good as he is, are people almost taking him and his greatness for granted?
Yes, and this is where I love coming on your show. Sometimes I'll go on shows and people will not even understand hockey. You get it, and you get it with depth. The thing about Ovechkin is, and this is not an original thought to me, I give full credit to Mike Rupp, Cup winner, 2003 Cup clinching goal scorer for the New Jersey Devils. He said that if his name was, say, for instance, Jim Rome, and he was doing the kind of things he's done for years, winning eight Rocket Richards, having all these 50-goal seasons. This year he's on pace for 56 goals. He's two away from being 200 away from Gretzky's long-lasting record. I think he'd be more respected, more appreciated, more adored. Even when he won the Cup a couple of years ago, people were like, well, yeah, it's about time. It reminds me of Charo on the Love Boat. She was underappreciated at the time. I don't know what it is, but we, as Americans, and hey, I'm as patriotic as an American as I can find, I don't know that we give the level of appreciation and respect to players from outside America, from even outside North America. Ovi is special, and what he's doing is truly unprecedented.
You're so right. He does not get the respect that he deserves, nor does Chara. Well, said. What a great analogy that is. Tony Loughman joining us. Since you mentioned 99, Wayne Gretzky's got the all-time record, 894. Now, Ovechkin's 34. It seems ridiculous to even pose the question, but could you see Ovechkin making a run at that number?
Absolutely, and it is stunning because the way that Gretzky dominated statistically is unprecedented. If you look at any of the sports, the fact of the matter is, if he'd never scored a goal, he'd still be the leading scorer in the history of the league just based on assists, 1,963. But he also has more goals than anybody, 894. The thing is, in terms of 50-goal seasons, Ovi is on pace for his ninth this year. The only guys to ever do that are Gretzky and Mike Bossy. What Alex Ovechkin is doing is so unbelievable because it's a different era. When Gretzky played, the final scores were like 6-5. Now it's 3-2. It is truly extraordinary, his durability over the last 10 years. Alex Ovechkin has played in 98% of the Caps' regular season games. It's almost unheard of, and he hits. It's not like he's a guy that shies away from contact. He plays with a combination of power and speed that people have never seen before. He's truly the great eight. And I wish more people appreciated him the way you and I do.
Tony Loughman joining us. All right, one last stop before you go, Tony. It was not that long ago that you and I were talking about the amazing story of the Vegas Golden Knights and them going to the Stanley Cup Final in their first season. Gerard Gallant won the Jack Adams that year. He led them back to the playoffs last season and then was fired this month. What do you make of that decision?
It was shocking. To be totally honest, it was stunning. There have been seven coaching changes over a roughly 60-day period this season. We see it now, I think, in all the pro sports. It's NHL, National Hockey League, but I say it's not here long. The level of expectation is so high. What he did with that first-year team is unprecedented in any sport. But the way that this team performed last year in the playoffs, albeit getting a raw deal on a tough call against San Jose, and then not performing up to the standards they'd set, he became a victim of his own success. Coach Wooden, and you knew I was going to throw in a Coach Wooden quote.
I knew it. I was waiting.
A friend of his said to him after the 64 team won their first title and they went 30-0, one of his coaching buddies said, oh, you've really done it now, John. Now they're going to expect you to do this all the time. The point is, I think Gerard Gallant became a victim of his own success, to say nothing of the fact that he has had a legendary career ever since he stopped playing Mel on Alice at Mel's Diner, where they would ring the bell and he would yell, pick up, tell me he doesn't look like that guy. He does, Gerard Gallant. I love him.
Too much. How about flow? How are you going to go there and not mention flow? Did you mention and how are you going to mention Coach Wooden and not mention Coach Herrick? The other day, Janet breaks out the LA Times and says, look at this. There was a piece on Cal State Northridge assistant coach Jim Herrick. Have you talked to the stud lately?
I sure have. And I've also talked with Ed O'Bannon and Toby Bailey. It is one of the great mistakes that UCLA has made. He's not in the UCLA Athletics Hall of Fame. It's like this Orwellian thing where they've expunged his contribution from our national championship. It's ludicrous that guy would not be in the UCLA Athletics Hall of Fame. It's something they've got to get right, and it's something I hope they get right soon. He earned it, he deserves it, and we're all behind him.
I used to love Toby Bailey coming on the program. Really quickly, have you reached out to your guy George Zadik lately?
Yeah, we trade emails. I'm grateful for emails. Now with the little baby, he's going to turn one. I'm conscious of trying to save for college, so I can't be calling across the pond. But Georgie and I trade emails. He is such a smart dude. He's such a fun guy. His son is playing college basketball. I wish I remember which team he's playing for. I think he played against Pepperdine this Christmas. So George was out this Christmas. I love him. Great, quick George Zedek story. He learned English from watching comedy movies. So he used to talk like Ace Ventura. He couldn't really speak great English, but he would go, all righty then.
Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Tad Boyle is my guest. Tad, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Jim, good to be with you.
It's good to have you, Tad. Thanks so much. You dropped a game against Arizona on Saturday, but then you bounced right back and you beat Washington State, Tad, 78-56 last night. I want to get into a couple of details about that game in a second, but overall, how pleased were you with the way your guys bounced back and the way they showed up last night?
Very much so. I mean, we've got a tough group, and we've responded pretty much every game this year after a loss, and they take ownership. They don't point fingers. They look at themselves in the mirror, you know. And Arizona kicked our tails in the backboard. We haven't been beaten like that, you know, in quite some time. And our guys responded. I think we were plus 17 last night on the Cougars. So we got our edge back a little bit.
Tad, not only were you plus 17 last night, but you were plus 17 without Tyler Bay, who is your leading rebounder, and you were plus 17. If we go back to the start of the season, you were really excited about the depth of this team. So what do you make about the way everybody stepped up and hit the glass in his absence?
Yeah, to have a guy like Lucas Seward, you know, 6'10", guy that stretches the defense, and to get 16-10, he's normally coming off the bench, but he moves into the starter's role with Tyler being out. And then we've got Dallas Walton, a 7-footer, who's coming off an ACL, who hasn't played a lot of minutes, and he gets the kind of the backup minutes, and he plays well. So that's the depth that we were talking about before the season started, and you got to be able to withstand, you know, injuries or sickness or whatever you run into through the course of a college basketball season.
Tad Boyle joining us. Now, they responded in the second half as well. You held Washington State to only 23 points in the second half, 37% shooting for the game, and tied their season low for scoring, defense, and rebounding. I mean, these aren't things that guys always want to do, but as head coach, how much fun is it to coach a group that's going to put in that work that embraces some of the dirty details that guys don't want to do?
That's the whole key, and that's what makes this team special, Jim, in my opinion. Now, you know, we don't know how the season's going to play out, but, you know, up until this point, our guys really take pride in the defensive end of the floor and getting stops. It starts with our point guard, McKinley Wright, who's one of the most underrated, I think, players and defenders in college basketball. But, you know, Evan Batty down low is he's not afraid of anybody, and he's a big wide body guy who loves physicality. So when you have two guys like that and the rest of the guys kind of fall in line, you got a special team.
Tad Boyle joining us. I wanted to ask you about both those guys, actually. McKinley Wright, the fourth, had 10 points. He had 10 assists. He had 6 rebounds. He had 3 blocks. For those who are not familiar with him or his game, as they should be, what is it about him that makes him so special as a player that excites you?
His toughness, Jim, and just his will to win. He's got, you know, you hear people talk about it all the time. He's got the it factor, and I don't know how you define it, but McKinley Wright's got it. And the thing I love about him is he'll do a lot of different things to help you win a game. It might be an offensive rebound as a 6-foot point guard. It might be guarding the other team's best perimeter player. It might be getting a big defensive rebound or taking a charge. He's in great distributorship mode. He broke the school record last night for double-digit assist games. That's his 7th in his career. And he's, you know, Jay Humphries is a guy whose record he broke, who was a pretty special player here back in the day. So McKinley can just help you win in so many different ways.
Colorado head coach Tad Boyle is my guest. Now, when you talk about special players back in the day, the story goes that back when Wright was a freshman, you called Chauncey Billups, and you told him that Wright was his kind of guy. That was the start of a relationship where Wright and Billups have worked out together. What did you see in Wright that made you say that, and what's it mean to have an alum like Chauncey who's willing to work with a young player?
Well, look, McKinley is he's special. We knew that about a week on campus. I mean, it doesn't take you very long as a coach to get those things figured out. And the way you figure it out usually in the summertime is when your players or your former players, you know, talk to you. And once you got McKinley in workouts and practice, you know, he's a guy that, you know, when I did talk to Chauncey, hey, you're going to like this kid. Chauncey takes a keen interest in our program, obviously being an alum. And his brother Rodney was on our staff for 6 years. He's now at the University of Denver. So, you know, he puts a lot of attention into that program now as well because blood is thicker than water. But Chauncey, he's his kind of player. And he's a guy that, you know, Chauncey, for many players, you know, throughout, you know, Colorado basketball, when they come through here, he likes to keep an eye on them and build relationships with them. And he and McKinley have done that.
Man, that's cool. That's invaluable. Tad Boyle joining us. Tad, you mentioned Evan Batty. He had 12 points and 10 rebounds last night. Now, we're talking about somebody who was back home here in California 2 years ago playing pickup ball with his friends when he had a stroke. What do you remember feeling and thinking when you first received that news?
Disbelief, Jim. You don't think of guys who – and Evan had come here. You know, he's a big-bodied kid. I'd mentioned that. Anybody knows him or is familiar with his game knows how he's a thick kid. He's, you know, he came here almost 300 pounds, and he redshirted his freshman year, did an unbelievable job with Stephen O'Hara, our strength coach, in trimming down. He had lost about 35 pounds, so he was in the best shape of his life, literally. And he goes home for Christmas during his, you know, those redshirt guys, it's a tough year on them. So when they go home for Christmas, I usually give them an extra 3 or 4 days to spend with their family. And Evan's a big family guy. And when I got the call that said he had a stroke, I said, no, that can't be right. I was almost in denial, you know, for maybe a week until, you know, the poor kid went through more tests than you know what to do with. I mean, I can't tell you how many tests he went through, and there's no rhyme or reason for it. And what I found out, Jim, through this process was about 1 in 3 youth stroke victims, there's no they can't pinpoint a reason, and Evan was one of those.
Yeah, but that's got to be so scary, right? Because you want a reason. You want to know how it happened to make sure it doesn't happen, and then you don't know. But then, Tad, 2 weeks after the stroke, you guys were playing USC. Evan attends the morning practice. He starts to shoot around. He's hitting threes. What did you think when you saw that?
I was just like, how did he have a stroke? You know, but his speech, he was really having trouble speaking, but he could step out on a basketball court and pick up a ball and whap a three. And so it's kind of incomprehensible in some ways, but I learned a lot. Evan's learned a lot. You know, our program has learned a lot about strokes and how to come back from them. But the intestinal fortitude that kid has shown, the toughness, and I sat down with he and his mom and said, hey, listen, if you don't ever want to play basketball again, I totally get it. You know, this is bigger than the game of basketball. But he's such a competitive kid, and basketball's such a big part of his life that he wanted to, you know, make a comeback, and he did. And that's what makes this story so special.
So let me say, I mean, I know you touched on this, but like, what's it mean then? Like you said, if you don't want to do this, I get it. But he did want to do it. So what's it mean to you to see him out there making, not only out there, but making a major contribution to this team?
It just warms your heart because you to know Evan Batty and to know the kind of kid he is. I should say kid, young man. He's not a kid anymore, but he's so infectious with his personality and his energy. He's our emotional leader. He's the guy. I mean, we blow the whistle to start practice or to end practice, and he's literally skipping to the center jump circle. You know, he's happy to be there every day, and he has that perspective, Jim, that I don't have. I haven't suffered a stroke, and other players don't have it, but he's got that perspective, and that's nice to see on a day-to-day basis.
And it's infectious. Tad Boyle joining us. A couple of quick things, Tad. You're the chairman of the NCAA Basketball Rules Committee. It would seem like a rather thankless job, but you want to take that on. How come?
Well, I was nominated, you know, by the Pac-12 conference, which I appreciated. It's not something I was really looking to do, but they asked me to do it, and I was honored to do that. And then you know, the former chairman had lost his job. Mark Fox was the former chairman, and he lost his job at Georgia. So I kind of got forced into that role. I was kind of a new guy on the block, and so they said, "You want to be chairman?" I said, "Yeah, I'll do that." And we got a lot of help. Art Hyland is unbelievable as a secretary, you know, editor. He helps a great deal. Dan Calandro at the NCAA office have been very, very instrumental in helping me kind of adjust to that role. But it's fun to, you know, dig into the rules. It's amazing as a coach. I had coached for, you know, 23 years before this assignment, and it's amazing how many rules I didn't know. You know, it's scary, and it makes me have more appreciation for officials and all the things that are on their plate on a nightly basis that I didn't really realize before I got on that committee.
Really interesting. Now, Tad, I know you love this group, and I also know there's a lot of basketball still to be played, but you've beaten some really good teams this year. You got number 13, Dayton. You got number 4, Oregon, earlier this month. What's it tell you about how good the potential for this particular group?
This team can rise to the occasion. There's no doubt about that. Now, the problem we've faced is sometimes we're not ready to play every single night, and we always don't have the attention to detail that you need to have to be an elite level team. We're working on that, and we're getting better in that area. But, you know, we don't really have any bad losses. I mean, Oregon State's a quality team. They beat us at home. Northern Iowa's a really good team in the Missouri Valley. They beat us at home. We lost to a really good Kansas team. And so I know this team can rise to the level. It's can we be a consistent, you know, performer? And that's where, like, a game tomorrow against Washington at home, you know, is a real test for us.
That's big. Last thought. You've been so great with your time. I don't want to get greedy, but you did play for one of my favorite guys ever in Larry Brown at Kansas. Yeah. What was it like to play for Coach Brown?
It was an awesome experience. And, you know, I can say that, you know, 20-some years later. The one thing I really appreciated about Coach Brown is he made his players and demanded that his players play the right way. And he was a great teacher of the game. And what I really appreciated about him, and I was not his best player. Okay, Danny Manning was his best player. But the thing that makes Coach Brown, in my mind, so special is he always coaches his best player the hardest. And a lot of coaches, especially at the NBA level, and even sometimes at the college level, Jim, they don't want to, you know, ruffle the feathers of their best player. They don't want to challenge their best player. Coach Brown, he didn't care if you were the best player or the 13th guy on the team. He was going to demand, you know, you play the right way and you do things the right way. And sometimes that he butted heads. But, you know, it's funny, you mentioned Chauncey earlier. When I, you know, had lunch with Chauncey when I got this job 10 years ago, and we were kind of shooting the breeze, and I said, Chauncey, who was the best player you ever, or best coach you ever played for? And, you know, the question was barely out of my mouth, and he said, Larry Brown.
Huh.
You know, and I think if you ask Allen Iverson, you know, he'd probably answer the same thing, or Danny Manning, or certainly Tad Boyle.
It seems kind of counterintuitive, right? Because I get that. I absolutely understand that. But part of me also thinks that if you're a head coach and you want any kind of stability, you better get along with your best player, so therefore you better not push him too hard.
And that's my point. That is exactly my point, is he wasn't afraid of that. You know, he wasn't afraid of pushing it because he was a principled guy and he knew basketball is supposed to be played this way. You're supposed to give great effort. You're supposed to play both ends of the floor, not just one end of the floor. You're supposed to pass it when you're double teamed. You know, play the game the right way. And Coach Brown knew that, and he knew how to teach it, and he knew how to demand it from every player on his team. He didn't. You know, another thing I learned from you treat everybody fairly, but you don't treat them the same. You know, and that's another, you know, counterintuitive thing. Sometimes think, you know, I ought to treat everybody the same way. No, you don't have to treat everybody the same way. You got to treat people differently based on their personalities. And so Coach Brown was so good at those little things. There's a lot of guys that know the game. There's a lot of guys that know how to teach the game. But he was the whole package.
Let's roll the week that was.
I'll tell you what. I learned one thing since I've been here.
You got to fight for your right to party!
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Back in sunny, warm Southern California. Nice to be with you. What's cracking? I will never, ever complain about how cold this studio is ever again. Holy crap, KC. I've got exactly one thing to say. How about them Chiefs?
Yeah! For the end zone! Touchdown!
Not exactly a tackling clinic by Tennessee, but that was not about what Tennessee didn't do. That was all about what Pat Mahomes did do. Absolutely was not going to be taken to the ground. Signed Boomer Esiason wearing his wife's headband and Elton John's sunglasses on the CBS pregame show. None of us gave a damn how we looked. It was so cold. At that point, it was just a matter of survival, preservation.
Yesterday, with that wind, we're all tearing up. We're getting dusty-eyed.
Happy blubbering, be a blubbering mess, my man, at the end of the Super Bowl.
Chiefs fan, were all you crying after that?
Shark-infested waters, Frank!
Get out of the water! Get to the beach! Frank Clark, the shark!
That trophy that got my own last name on it!
Go! Now, Tanny! He is Dan Wojcicki.
The Caruso thing is like,
awesome.
I mean, obviously, this balding, thinly mustachioed white guy who's 25, who looks like he's Schneider from, I don't even remember that show.
One Day at a Time. So much for cage rust. Connor knocked it off in seconds and nearly knocked off Cowboy's head a few seconds after that. For the first time in a long time, it was a good Conor McGregor headline.
Good thing he beat Khalib, Cowboy, because when Masvidal jumps up.
Yeah, but Rob, who's your favorite player? Well, it's a tie between the 1,696 rostered guys in the league. But if I had to choose one, Roger Goodell. Can't you tell by my hat?
A belated congratulations on pulling the trigger on the merger with CBS. Welcome to the jungle, Sherry.
The LeBron James got dunked on.
As always, my policy on guys getting dunked on is it'll happen.
Yeah, it happens.
Tyke, does it happen? Does it happen? Does it happen? Does it happen? Does it happen to all of us?
Yeah.
See you tomorrow, Big Cat. Kelvin Sampson is my guest.
Having a granddaughter and having my family all together, so, you know, you get older. We're on a rat race trying to do this, do that.
Gajetta's game between rivals and Reem on the
outside. It was really surreal. Like, I was shaken by the whole thing.
And Gajetta runs her down.
It was good to have Jungle Racing back in the winner's circle. We have not had that in a long time. Pete Prisco.
You warmed up yet? What was it, Carbone from Goodfellas who was frozen in the truck? That's what we were.
Live from the Farmers Insurance Open
Charlie
at Torrey Pines.
Hoffman is my guest. What's it like living in Poway? That is a great place.
City in the country, Poway, yeah. I've upgraded a little bit to Rancho Santa Fe now, but Poway where my roots at.
I can't let you go without a prediction. Who is the favorite at Torrey Pines this week in your mind?
Well, watching Tiger, I mean, I just followed him on the front nine. He'd certainly be a guy I'd point out. But I just think Rory's mind is in such a good place.
I knew he was different. He was the kind of guy, obviously like me, straight shooter, will tell you exactly how it is. He'd give you a bunch of you know, he'd tell you you're not that good.
Pat, we're not on the podcast. You can't drop four-letter bombs on this show, all right?
Talk a lot of smack. A
lot of junk.
You know, a lot of junk.
Players from both sides at each other.
Oh, no.
We're joined by Jocko Willink.
If you're feeling like maybe you're not ready, what you should do is just lay in bed a little bit longer, maybe order some donuts, and just get up whenever you want. And let the world pass you by, because that's what's going to happen.
Right wing three again. Got it again!
Grid hating, start celebrating, Zion.
They don't want to go about
the hell with Zion. That announcer is the story.
Oh, my heaven, straight away three.
Absolutely!
Big dog, what are you doing?
Making it good!
Kyle Lowry is my guest.
Hey, Jim, how you doing, buddy? It's always good to be in the show.
We've been talking about bringing them back. So do you want the tour stop? Do you give a damn? Do you care? Do you want me to come back? Make an argument for me, because we are in the process of selecting a town, a venue, and a date.
Hey, Denver, stay in your lane. It was impossible for your tour stop to live up to the monster that was KC. Please make this happen.
Oil checking is highly prohibited as well.
What is oil checking?
Oh, man, if they don't know, they got to Google that term.
What did you make of The Rise of Skywalker?
It was an enjoyable movie. They went back into the original story stuff. It was way better than The Last Jedi.
Get back to New Jersey with that type of attitude.
Steal the flex, the curse out. Don't think that he understood that the entire basketball world would be able to read lips and see what he had said.
Just cheat for my sanity. And if you already are, you suck at it. For real. Do better.
If you smell what Mahomes is cooking.
We'll be rocking Sapphire and whatever else you want to drink, and Florida Stonecraft, and of course, Diamond Doll Strippers.
Name me better pairing than strippers and crabs.
The question was barely out of my mouth, and he said Larry Brown.
Larry Brown.
He was the whole package.
You got to upgrade, Jim.
Casey. Well, right here, Nathan.
Jay, you know, thank you. Anytime, man. Anytime.
A cheeseburger and went to bed.
Everybody gets a take.
Let's wrap this up so we can go take care of business.
You know, cranks it all the way up.
Oh, take that.
Happens to us all.
The king.
All righty, then. Thanks, Jim. Go Charles.
Come on, all four of you knobs do it.
Good night now.
Omaha, Nebraska. Brian in Bugaha. If you didn't know, now you do. He is the chairman of the so-called Jungle Open. Brian, what's going on? How are you?
Fantastic, Romy. How are you doing today on this
awesome
lovely Friday?
Awesome. Talk to me about your tournament. Where do things stand?
Well, right now, we are looking at a three-day tournament on the weekend of the College World Series, June 12th to 14th. We got a bigger showing already coming around this year. I mean, I'm pumped about it. We got guys from SoCal. We've got guys from South Carolina, Texas, Wisco, Kansas, all over. It's going to be amazing.
Awesome.
So what I wanted to get to here was I've been hearing a lot of junk from Niner fan over the last couple days. And, you know, that's cute. These jabronis have this Jimmy G, GQ, trailer trash looking QB. You've got some candy ass tight end from the University of Iowa. You might have a few physical defensive players. That's cute and all. We got a cheetah. We got some bro who just wants to fight for his right to party. We got a genius play calling Walrus. Not to mention we have the people's champ, the reigning MVP, Patrick Mahomes. That dude is going to take his size 13 Adidas cleat, turn that sumbitch sideways, and stick it straight up their candy ass if you smell what Mahomes is cooking.
And my man Eric in Orlando. Eric, what's going on?
Romy, thanks for taking my call, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Tell me you've got a story about a yacht.
I do. And I get an invitation for you and stone crab. Florida stone crab is involved and strippers.
All right.
I'm going to be hour.
Go ahead.
You, Romy, up in Fort Lauderdale on the yacht. You and Hawk are cordially invited up. We're going to have a pre-party and the Super Bowl party. I know you probably can't make it for the Super Bowl party, but we will be on board. We'll be rocking Sapphire and whatever else you want to drink, and Florida Stone Crab, and of course, Diamond Doll Strippers.
All right, I'm probably good without the strippers, but so you're about an hour away. So if I'm in Miami on Radio Row, if I were to drive an hour, I could get to the yacht?
Yes, and I'll give you the name of the yacht and the marina off there, because I don't want the renegade clones, you know, crashing the boat, you know.
Let's go to Mark in Boston. Mark, what's up? How are you?
Jim, what's happening, partner?
What's up, partner?
Hey, man, listen, you know, Radio Row right around the corner, I have a legit question for you and your audience. Has anyone seen Bill Romanowski for the last 364 days? I mean, I'm convinced this dude spends the rest of his year hooked up to a pod that feeds him protein, Dianabol, and no more than 2 gallons of water a day. I mean, they occasionally open it up to rub some cream and clear on his chest before he comes out of hibernation for one day to do your show, make fun of fatties, and then return to his sleep trainings. Honest question, Jim. Does Romo cut up lines of creatine when he's at your table and offer you the mirror like, you want to hit this, bro? No, Romo, we're good, man. That's all you. Hey, and if this gets back to Romo and he manages to ask you about it next week, tell him it was Mark in Hollywood. Like, please, seriously, do not tell him I said any of this. And I wanted to chime in really quick on the brawl between Kansas and K-State. I saw they handed out some pretty hefty suspensions. You know, given Bill Self's track record with the NCAA, do you think those players are on paid or unpaid leave? Look, don't get me wrong. Look, I'm all for dropping the bag. I've been openly advocating for Michigan to cheat for like a decade, and I am here now to make an impassioned plea to Jim Harbaugh. Dude, cheat. Please, God, just cheat like everyone else is doing it. I promise. They don't remember your graduation rates. They remember if you won. Years from now, that sanctimonious bag, Dabo, is going to get busted. And you know what? No one's going to care. We all saw the games. They were dominant. I don't care how Clemson got there. They beat Ohio State. We haven't beaten Ohio State since before Hawk got his growth spurt. The last time Silk was winning smack-offs, and Stevie Carbone could still walk out his front door without getting stuck. That's a long time, bro. Just cheat for my sanity. And if you already are, you suck at it. For real. Do better. Hey, Jim, I was going to make a quick Antonio Brown joke, but Radio Row is like 20 minutes from Hollywood, Florida, and I do not want him showing up and smashing Hawk's face with a rock, so you're welcome. Bye.
Good night,